Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series, a service of the American Institute of CPAs and the Chartered Institute of Management Accountants. This series features discussions with Chartered Global Management Accountants and other experts about the topics, trends, and technologies that are transforming the accounting profession.
Welcome to the CGMA Magazine podcast series. I'm Editorial Director Jack Hagel. In today's episode, contributing editor Andrew Kenny speaks with Francis Ryan about how accountants can better communicate financial information to non-financial staff. Frank is the president of Semper Finance, a management consulting firm that specializes in turnarounds, crisis management, and strategic planning. He's worked as a chief operating officer for a manufacturing company, and he's served on the boards of public and not-for-profit organizations. Frank is a CPA who holds the CGMA designation. Andrew caught up with him at the AICPA Global Manufacturing Conference in Denver, Colorado. Here's Andrew.
Mr. Ryan, why don't you start by describing your firm's mission and the work you do involving accountants and their communication of information?
Absolutely. What our firm does, Semper Finance, specializes in helping companies keep out of bankruptcy, as well as doing corporate restructurings. We specialize significantly in implementing lean systems and activity-based costing and performing strategic operation risk analysis for organizations.
That sounds like pretty technical work. Where does presentation of information, where does communication come into that?
In absolutely every area where those items are concerned, be the strategic operation risk analysis, which we call a SORA, or activity-based costing lean or corporate restructuring, requires us to be able to communicate effectively key critical success factors to members of the management team that are not financial executives, so they understand what is needed to be done in order to put the tourniquet, so to speak, on the loss of income or loss of blood in the case of an organization, so the company can survive. So that communication skill is absolutely the key aspect of it. We mentioned to many of our young associates that absent the ability to communicate these issues, the organization is not likely to be able to listen to what we have to say, which makes the turnaround that much more difficult.
What kind of mistakes do you see accountants making? Is it a matter of making information too complicated, or are people presenting the wrong information altogether?
Interestingly, it's one of those cases where it's actually both issues. We're seeing cases where much of the information that's presented is significantly more technical than is appropriate to a non-financial audience. Non-financial members of your organization don't understand U.S. GAAP. They don't understand necessarily accrual method of accounting. They're more interested in what's driving the cost, and which we know is as CGMAs and CPAs. The other aspect of it is we're not always communicating the information that is needed for them in order to be able to do it. Specifically, where that's a major issue is in the cost drivers and the critical success factors of the company. So what we recommend to CFOs, CPAs, that are controllers and CGMAs, is to make sure when you're explaining the information, you explain to people why you're giving them the information you're giving them, what the purpose is of that information, and what decision you would help to lead them to by virtue of the information that you've presented to them. And there's a tremendous responsibility when you do that. That responsibility means that you are remaining, as part of our CPA and CGMA ethics standards, maintaining our objectivity, which means we have to be impartial, intellectually honest, and free of conflicts of interest. And that's a very tough tale to present.
As accountants in modern world where big data reigns supreme, there is an unlimited amount of potential financial information that you can present. How do I begin to make a framework that can tell me what kind of information will be important to management?
We're very fortunate in the accounting profession and as part of our CGMA standards. The CGMA actually helps do that for us. There are some major pillars of the CGMA standard, which includes strategic planning, enterprise risk management, lean systems, activity-based costing, customer relationship management, and value process controls. Those six areas are all embodied in the COSO standards, which stands for the Committee on Sponsoring Organization. So I would encourage any member to go to the CGMA magazine, take a look there. I would encourage any member to go to the COSO standards. And I would encourage you to go to the ethics standards that were just codified for CPAs in industry as it relates to our responsibility to identify threats, which is very integrally a part of being a CPA, a CGMA, as well as understanding enterprise risk management. What I would do in a nutshell is encourage the organization to do everything they can to look at what your critical success factors are. Perform a strategic operation risk analysis using the Committee on Sponsor and Organization COSO standards and identifying those cost drivers and critical success factors, and then develop a measure of effectiveness for each one of those and then communicate that. And if you do that, you'll hit a home run with your organization and give them the information that they need, when they need it, and for the reasons that they need it.
Well, let's take it back all the way. You talk a lot in your presentations about vision, strategy, and mission, which are, of course, broad ideas that are at the heart of a company. Why don't you talk a little bit about their significance, and then we'll move on to how you connect them to individual metrics.
It is absolutely impossible for an organization to do a strategic operation risk analysis or an effective enterprise risk, lean, or activity-based costing without a crystal clear understanding of what the vision and the mission is. And that's embodied in the product concept. The product concept is the verbal message of what the vision is. It's why the customer is buying from you. What is it that you do that's causing that customer to say, I'm willing to allocate my limited funds to buy your product or service? It's a result of understanding the determinants of demand, as well as understanding the elasticity of demand, which is how sensitive the consumer is to price changes. Understanding that vision is absolutely essential, and that if every person in the management team is not aware of what the vision is, it's virtually impossible to develop the critical success factors. I had an interesting opportunity to meet a few CPAs recently, and they made a comment to me that as a result of their attempt to implement Lean, it wasn't successful. And I said, do you know why it wasn't successful? And he said, we think we do. We think it was because it's not clear what the vision is of the organization. So we don't know what we're getting Lean to. So I often make this comment, if you're having difficulty, as an example, losing weight, you would typically say what my goal is. My goal might be to drop 10 pounds. Absent knowing what that goal is, it's virtually impossible for the organization and the person to be able to lose the effective amount of weight that they need to lose. They need to know what the goal is. What's the objective? Why are we doing this?
You have mentioned critical success factors, which seem to be a bridge between your broader strategy or vision and your role as an accountant. What exactly are they, and how does one identify them?
The critical success factor is, in fact, the bridge. It is all of those elements. A critical success factor is all of those elements, the presence or absence of which can lead to the success or failure of an organization. I think probably an example would be useful. If you have a child and that child wants to go to a school, a university, the parent's perception is that the school would have enough measures in effect to provide for the safety of the child. So as a result, if someone were to come onto campus and try to do ill to the child, then the child would then be protected because the campus would have lockdown procedures. Hospitals do it all the time in the new birth areas. They put bracelets around the children, and if that baby goes beyond a certain point, the entire hospital goes on lockdown. They're critical success factors because those are things that if the company or the organization doesn't do, you'll fail. So as a result, then how do you identify what those are? That requires the financial person, the accountant, the CPA, the CGMA, to sit with the entire members of the management team as part of an enterprise risk and break down everything that your company and organization does and identify specifically what is it that the customer is looking for? What is the customer expecting? When you get on an airplane, it's rational to expect that the airplane will be properly maintained. That's a given. That's a critical success factor. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the airline is, in fact, doing that. What it means is that you need to have protocols in place to make sure that the airline is able to pull off what they say they're going to do. And that's how you tie those in together. And what we recommend you do is do a strategic operation risk analysis. That would include understanding the economic environment, what makes a good customer, what makes a good employee, what makes a good supplier, what makes a good banking institution, what makes a good regulatory relationship with state and local bodies or federal.
Once an accountant has decided, and once the management team has decided what types of factors to measure. What's the best way to go about the company and begin to set up information streams that will measure those factors?
That's a great point and a great question. One thing that you want to be careful about is we have a tendency in finance and accounting to accumulate way too much data. So this is where you take a look at critical success factors and the issue about activity-based costing and combine it with lean. And what you do is you only collect that data that's necessary. I encourage organizations that are using big data and cloud computing and things of that nature to be careful that just because you can collect it doesn't mean you should. And one of the things that I think probably a great lesson that we can learn from history is in World War II, prior to the U.S. landing and the world landing, Britain's and the Allies landing in Normandy, they did as much as they possibly could to inundate the airwaves with as much information as they possibly could, so you couldn't sort through it. And as a result of that, too much data actually prevents you from getting any information. So what we would encourage you to do is carefully select your critical success factors and then determine what information you need to monitor those. And that's easier said than done. It requires a collective effort with the finance organization, the finance staff, with everybody else in the organization to make certain that you're only collecting that data, which you should. If you have a monthly financial statement and you're publishing 50, 60, 70, or 80 pages, I would tell you you should get it down to 2 pages and eliminate everything else.
And even though you're simplifying, however, it seems like a revamp of the information that's being presented to the board and to management can often involve finding new information, does it not?
It absolutely does. And what it does is, and I think that's a very astute point, because what it does is it helps reinforce that you may find out that you have critical success factors that you didn't even know about, which would then mean very clearly that you want to start collecting data for that, which also means that the critical success factors and the data you're accumulating are not intended to be a stagnant piece of information, but they are to be interactive, and you are to change those as your business model changes. So I would encourage you to review the data you're collecting at least quarterly, and a worst-case scenario, semi-annually, to make sure you're still collecting that which you should.
As an accountant is preparing to build these new data streams, collecting this new information that he or she wants to present, what other obstacles or costs should he or she be prepared for?
The individual definitely has to be aware that the senior management team may not buy into what you're doing. And that's where this communication skill comes into play. So you have to really spend time. I would call it a straw person that you would have that would be available. That would be a non-financial person, a close advisor, that you can sit with them and test the information on them, see if they understand how clear it is or if it's not clear. We really recommend people to make sure that you're collecting data that conveys the proper message, not always the easiest message. I've occasionally run into situations where people have dumbed down the information thinking the recipient didn't understand it, where you're far better off to delivering the information that's appropriate and help educate them in how to use the information you're giving them.
And before we move too much further into the questions of how best to present and publish the information, let's return to the collection of it. Are there any other costs or technical obstacles that may stand in the way of implementing your new information plan?
There are. And one of the things that you should always be very concerned about is that a 95% solution that's put into place on time is far superior than a 100% solution that's delivered 10 weeks late.
Is that a solution that includes 95% of the information I want?
That's correct. It's, in other words, by coming up with that 95% solution, and I'll give you a perfect example that happened to me. As part of my master's degree, became quite capable in doing least square transportation algorithms for the movement of materials around plants. And it usually involves a fairly sophisticated quadratic equation. And I was presenting a major investment that would be required, and I was somewhat impressed with my own degree of sophistication, and I was explaining this fairly sophisticated model to the president of the company, and he closed this thing up, and he said, "Can you just sit down and talk to me for a second?" And I said, "Sure." He said, "Do you know how much I make?" And I said, "I do. We're publicly traded. I can see it." And he said, "And I know how much you make because I pay your salary." He said, "Would you bank your family's fortune on something you didn't understand?" And I said, "No, sir, I wouldn't." He said, do you think you can go back and present this in a way that someone who's not an expert in quantitative methods would be able to understand it? And I said, yes, sir, I do. And I came back about 3 days later with a 95% solution that he got. He took it to the board of directors. He let me present it, and it was approved. So you have to be careful not to complicate things just because you can.
Now, in that case, did you still have that extra 5% of information in the background, or did you just eliminate that from your model altogether?
Well, I didn't show them the model at all. I presented it in a different way. The model was how I developed the answer. The presentation was different. And that's probably the biggest lesson that I learned, is that you don't have to present the model. You have to present the premise of the model, the framework of the model, the way the study was done, not how you did it.
Now, what, in a nutshell, is your objective in presenting this information? What should is it one universal objective?
It is, and I want to really emphasize this because this is, I think, one of the most important things I've run into in my career. We have a what I call core values of being a CGMA and a CPA. They are integrity, objectivity, independence, due care, and attuned to broad business knowledge. They're in our ethics standards. Objectivity means to be impartial, intellectually honest, and free of conflicts of interest. And we emphasize that as a CGMA and a CPA. But in this environment of presenting financial information to non-financial executives, it is absolutely essential that we go in and provide information free of material bias. Because if you present information that is called confirmation bias, I'm going to give you information that reaffirms what I want you to do and not give you the information that disputes what I'm going to do, you have permanently impaired the value of your license and of being a CGMA. It is essential that you provide information that provides an answer, a solution, and the integrity of the data we present.
Now, this drive to achieve impartiality, does that mean that accountants should not present suggestions or their honestly held opinions about the financial course of the company?
Oh, no, quite the contrary. What the contrary is that we're developing information free of material bias. And then what we're saying is, based upon that information, here's what we would recommend to you to do, based upon an analysis of the courses of action that have been well thought out in every particular case, based upon the quality of the information and the critical success factors and the cost drivers that we've identified.
What happens if I don't include a recommendation?
One of the concerns would be is that the person you're providing the financial information may have that recommendation. And if they provide you with that and suggest that you examine that alternative as well, and it appears to be fairly obvious to someone else, they may then question whether or not you've been biased in your analysis.
How important is it to include a suggested course of action in a presentation?
It is absolutely essential. That's where we bring value, to include a recommended course of action. They're looking for our guidance. They may not accept it, but they're looking for our guidance. And if you want to increase your value to the organization, it's essential that you show the members of the organization that you've looked at this information, can come up with a reasonable and rational conclusion, and say, for the reasons of these courses of action, I would recommend you take these steps. I had a CFO one time complain to me that it seemed like the board was constantly coming back with answers different than he was. And we had a long discussion about it. I said, well, it's happening for two reasons. One is, there are some very obvious courses of actions that you're ignoring. So we're bringing them up. And because you've not considered them, we question how thoroughly you did your job. That's number one. The second issue is, if you don't help us lead to a recommended course of action, here's in essence what the CFO and controller have done. They've left it to the benefit and the intellect of the people who are only tangentially involved with some of these decisions to come up with a response to something you know intimately. Well, think about if you went into a doctor's office and you had a problem, and the doctor says, what would you like to do, as opposed to guiding you on what some recommended answers would be. So we bring value to the table by developing these recommended solutions.
It seems as if you're not making the decision, but you are trying to provide your team with access to all the pros and cons and various factors that you can see as the accountant.
Absolutely. That's precisely what we're trying to do.
Now, what forms of media, what types of presentations are available for putting this kind of information forward?
What you want to do is you want to look at the level of the audience where it's going to. You don't want to have a meeting with employees and kill them with PowerPoint presentations and Excel spreadsheets. What I would recommend is if it's a board of directors, as an example, that what you want to do is you want to make certain that the board of directors see something in advance. So I would always provide information in anticipation of the meeting so that the board members can ask intelligent questions and use something like a media of either a PDF file or a PowerPoint or other available technologies as they change so that you can show the thought process that you use to make the decisions. But let them see it in advance. They should not be surprised with information when they walk in, because they will then say, I need time to assimilate this and make the decision. So all you've done by waiting to give them information is you've lengthened the cycle it will take to make a decision, because you didn't give them information in advance. If you're going to make a decision to suppliers or communicate information to suppliers or to the employees of the company, I would encourage you to never give information in advance. And instead, what you do is you want to have either just a verbal description of what it is and talk to them, or perhaps some visual aids and flowcharts that you would not allow them to keep based upon their ability to handle some of the information we go. So you want to tailor the information to the audience that you're delivering the message to.
When you're presenting to the board and leadership, how much of your total message should be contained in the preview information?
I would recommend to you to send out all the information, to include the recommended course of action as well as the recommended solution, so that they can come to the meeting being prepared to have a conscious decision and thought process to ask questions. The purpose of the meeting at that point is to clarify what you have written, ask more questions, and then come to a final decision at the meeting. Know the purpose of the meeting.
Self-editing can be a helpful tool in preparing for presentations. How would you recommend accountants go about checking their presentations before making them?
I had one of the best pieces of advice ever given to me by the same individual who gave me the comments about the transportation algorithm in the company. And what he said is, take a course from someone in public speaking and then talk to a publisher, to an editor, to someone who's a journalism major, and get their input about how to streamline a message so that the message is clear and concise. One of the things I found is I didn't do that well. And even though I do a lot of public speaking now, I was at one point in time in my life very, very shy. And at the same time, I do a lot of op-ed pieces and a lot of writing. And I got turned down consistently for many, many, many years, 10, 15 years. And finally, an editor made a comment to me, and then the same message came about from the person who I was working for, who said, you can do anything in a lot of words, but it takes a real professional to do it in a few words. So I typically would write an op-ed piece, an opinion editorial, in 1,400 words, and I could do that in an hour. Then what would happen is, he said, we don't publish anything more than 600 words to 800 words, and it would take me 20 to 30 hours to go from 1,400 words to 800 words, and then to get it down to 600 would take even longer. I just finished writing two books. One was about my walk across the United States, and one about revolutionizing accounting for decision-making. I wrote both of the books in under a week each, but the editing process took me over 5 months to get it down to saying words that meant something rather than having a lot of redundant transactions in words.
And it sounds like some outside help can occasionally aid you in cutting those down.
In every case, I had outside help to provide me guidance, and it was a worthwhile situation to have someone who has a marketing background or a journalism background to help you in that kind of category, because they can help present it and show a better way to present it.
So you, as a speaker, obviously have a lot of experience. You tell jokes, you tell stories, and you look at ease up there. Does everyone have their own unique style, and how can people best become comfortable speaking to leadership, speaking to a general audience?
It is absolutely essential you know your own style. I know what mine is. It took me a while to find out what it was. I was what you would call an egghead when I was in college. I graduated summa cum laude, and I was number one in my class. I was a bookworm, to put it mildly, and didn't have a particularly good sense of humor. And what happened was I found out that some people didn't relate to that well, but it turned out I did have a sense of humor, just had to pull it out of the hat, so to speak. My son Matt and I worked together. My son Matt's got an entirely different style. When he's up in front of people, he approaches the same topic in a different way, and his message gets across just as equally well. So you have to find a style that you feel comfortable with. And that comes by practice and trial. And this is one case where I would encourage you to have someone that is a close friend that can tell you things that you need to hear rather than things you want to hear. I had someone review this book that I'd written once, and they came back and they said they loved it. Well, I used voice recognition software to dictate it, and I didn't read it after I did the first pass through. Well, they told me they loved it, and I went back then to start doing the edits, and I found out there were many number of sentence structures that were poorly done. I went from past tense to present tense and the like. And I really sat back and I thought, did this person even look at it at all? And so then I discounted value and I asked someone else to look at it. And when I made the corrections that I saw I needed to make, I didn't realize it was as bad as it was. I made a lot of the corrections, sent out to him, and I got back on a 160-page manuscript about 95 to 100 changes. And that was what I need here. And if you're sensitive about getting constructive feedback, then you probably don't want to be doing the CGMA, CPA, CFO controller work, because you need to hear that at times in order to become effective to get your message across.
How do you find the proper test audience? Because I imagine it's different whether you're planning to speak to the board or a general audience.
In a business environment, what I would typically do is with the president, chief operating officer, and people of that nature. If I'm doing it to a group of employees, I would talk to perhaps my HR director. If I was dealing to customers, I would talk to the head of sales and marketing. So I would use those folks as the trusted advisors, which means I'm going to try to establish a collaborative relationship with them, help them in as they would help me to craft a message.
I imagine that given the new volume of data available and some of the new presentation technologies available, that it's not just a matter of showing up at the board meeting anymore. What other routes are there for presenting this type of information, whether it's dashboards or otherwise?
We're using a great deal with daily flash reports. We take the critical success factors in the organization, the cost drivers, the macroeconomic issues, that strategic operation risk analysis, and we develop a 1 or 2 page benchmark that we publish. But you can only do that after you've already trained people on how to use it. And once you've done that, it almost becomes a self-monitoring system that we then would maintain. And that way people understand how that measure of effectiveness is being used.
To keep on top of that sort of technology, does it require a major financial investment?
Generally speaking, it doesn't. In fact, many times the financial investment can be significantly less. What it requires is a look at the presentation, the way it's being presented, the media over which it's being presented, how does the customer want it, what works and what doesn't work in terms of the information. And it can actually be less expensive because you'll be collecting less data than you might normally be collecting otherwise. So you can go it as part of a Lean Six Sigma activity-based costing approach.
Lastly, is training in this type of activity, the presentation of information to non-accountants, do you feel that it's available at an early enough stage in accountants' careers, or does the industry need to rethink how it approaches this?
It is absolutely not easily available early in a career, and it's one of the bigger mistakes that I think we make as we mentor younger people graduating from college and becoming young CPAs. We should be giving them the opportunity to meet with senior people. We should mentor them about how to craft a message, and we should allow them to stand in front of a camera and watch how they come across themselves in a test case before you put them in front of a customer, before you put them in front of a group, because many times you may not get a second approach. So to answer your question specifically, I absolutely believe it's imperative with a young staff to give them media training, to give them training presentation techniques, and how to present themselves to an audience.
Frank, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks again, Andy. Appreciate it.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or any of its subsidiaries or affiliates. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA, its affiliates, and subsidiaries are not engaged in rendering legal, accounting, or other professional services. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA, its subsidiaries, and affiliates make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and expressly disclaim all liability for such damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.